Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up on today's program, we've got an update on some of the week's news. Also in the program, the best of Dayton Youth Radio and Bill Felker's Poor Will's Almanac. Let's get to it. Military suicides continue to climb, and it's a deadly trend that Pentagon officials say is frustrating, and they're struggling to counter. Today on Veterans Voices, Margie Fritz of Columbus, the mother of two Army veterans, talks to her friend Claire Roderick about military suicide awareness.
I got married at 21. I'm sorry. My ex-husband was in the military at the time. When I found out that I was pregnant, I was just happy. I always wanted kids. I have a big family. And so I was excited. I was happy. Levi was my he wanted to join the Army when he was 8. He wanted to be an Army man. And then my middle kid, Caleb, they ended up joining the Army together. And it was not something that I wanted for my children. This was in 2012, in light of the fact that we were in the middle of a very, very long war. I didn't want my kids to do that. So I had two kids off and my marriage fell apart. So that ended a 25-year marriage. Mm-hmm. So it was very difficult. We didn't tell the kids until they came home at Christmas time. And then I don't know if you have a question or if you want me to elaborate on what's going on with my
currently
Army
the update,
children.
Yeah.
So this will be the hard part.
And we don't have to if you don't.
No, that's fine. So as you are aware, 22 veterans commit suicide every day on average. And it's a tragedy. And unfortunately, my oldest son got out of the Army August of 2018. And he killed himself November 1st of 2018. It was a very hard thing. And I found him. And it was, we still struggle. But there's a but. There's always a but. My son was a light in this world of darkness. And he made friends everywhere he went. It's a hard pill to swallow. But as a lesson, you can take that light. You can take that memory of Levi, and then you can be better for people.
Well, I think we were all just heartbroken.
Yeah.
And in awe of your ability to get up and articulate, even like I have never been to a service where people spoke so openly about the circumstances.
One of the things that I said from the very beginning was I would not allow somebody to hush it or shame it, because if 22 people died of anything a day, something would get done. Mm-hmm. And out of all of the suicides in the United States, the military make up 20% of them. And so when people are like, oh, he passed or he – I make sure that I say, no, he committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And it is an epidemic in our country.
We are in awe of your strength and courage. And you are becoming a light for others who need strength and help during this time.
Thank you.
That was Margie Fritz and Claire Roderick. The conversation took place at WYSO as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative, which visited the Miami Valley last summer. Veterans Voices on WYSO is presented by WritePat Credit Union with additional support from CareSource. This story was edited by Will Davis. Public health agencies across the Miami Valley are reporting a spike in flu cases and hospitalizations. Health officials say the outbreak is affecting a wide area, including Clark, Greene, and Montgomery counties. Numbers show hundreds of people in the Miami Valley have sought treatment for the flu since early December. Health officials have seen more than 3,000 hospitalizations and outpatient flu cases, but those numbers are likely an undercount, Greene County public health nurse Amy Schmidt says. Many people don't see a doctor, and she says flu cases often tend to spike after the holidays.
we had the holidays, we had Christmas, and then New Year's with people gathering together. And typically that's what we see early in January. It is an increase, and I think that's why we certainly made note of it. And then it gives public health an opportunity to educate folks in the community to say, hey, yeah, flu is here. We've seen an increase, and these are the things you can do to keep yourself healthy.
To avoid being infected, Schmidt recommends regular hand washing. Other prevention tips include using alcohol-based sanitizers, avoiding touching your eyes, nose, or mouth, covering coughs and sneezes, and getting plenty of rest. And for anyone already sick with the flu, health officials say it's important to stay home until your fever has been gone for at least 24 hours. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends a flu shot for anyone 6 months and older. But CDC officials caution it takes about 2 weeks for the flu shot's protective antibodies to develop. Chinese-owned Fuyao Glass America announced it's adding 100 new jobs in Marin. Fuyao company officials say the jobs are part of a major expansion that includes acquiring more of the former GM assembly plant. Monday's announcement at Fuyao included company officials, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, Lieutenant Governor John Husted, and representatives from Jobs Ohio. Governor DeWine said he was proud to have the world's largest auto glass facility operating in Ohio and called the $46 million investment by Fuyao a boost to the state's economy.
This investment in Montgomery County increases your presence here and shows your faith in the people working at this site.
Fuyao's investment in the Marin facility began in 2014. The plant now employs 2,300 people. The current expansion is aimed at stimulating more research and development and will provide auto glass for companies such as Safelite. In recent years, the company settled with some former workers and was fined for safety violations. Still, last year, the Marin plant recorded its highest profit so far. State development officials say they're hopeful Fuyao will continue to invest in the region. And just as the Miami Valley has been, is, and will forever be affected by changing labor trends, so are other areas of the state. For a century, the Mahoning Valley has ebbed and flowed with the fortunes of traditional manufacturing. Now it's looking toward a new economy, one defined by distribution centers and autonomous and electric vehicles. For Ohio Public Radio, WKSU's ML Schultze takes a closer look at the area's prospects for transformation.
Eight kids sit at the conference table pitching their projects. Smartphones that expand, fold, fit around their wrists.
Overseas compared to airplanes. Transporting from the inner Baltimore.
But the inaugural logistics class at Lordstown High School is not pitching the mythical technology. It's pitching ways to distribute the foreign-made goods in the U.S. market. With a $170 million home goods warehouse taking shape near the former GM plant, Lordstown Superintendent Terry Armstrong says this sort of class in how to move products around the globe makes sense. So, he says, would college-level courses in electric and autonomous vehicle technology at the high school.
We want to be part of it, we want to support them, and we want our people around here to be the workers there of the future.
Armstrong says that means planning for a future that has more unknowns than knowns. Here are the knowns. The GM assembly plant that employed 14,000 people at one time is gone. GM sold it cheap to a startup that plans to build electric pickup trucks. And in a joint venture, GM plans to build an electric vehicle battery plant nearby. The unknowns? Basically everything else. Taxes, training, incentives, investment, pay, unionization, even the future of the electric vehicle market itself. Dan Krause drives around the old GM plant. The commercial realtor points to the Home Goods Center, to the open fields where he envisions the battery plant, to a turnpike that's experimenting with autonomous vehicles, and to a state-of-the-art power plant. He weaves it together into a new economy for an old region.
This is a little like standing at the end of a runway. In a clear day, with keen eyesight, you can see planes circling. The question is, are we smart enough to help them land?
Among those trying to help them land is Ohio's governor, lawmakers, and the state's private jobs agency. After all, the new battery plant alone could create more than 1,100 jobs. J.P. Nassif heads Jobs Ohio, which boosts site selection, workforce development, and research.
And this one's particularly exciting because it really is planting the future right there in an area that is well-equipped to deliver.
But others in the Valley, home of steel, auto, and a lot of disappointment as those industries have shrunk, shifted, and disappeared, are more cautious. Pastor Joseph Walker heads the Trumbull County Ministerial Alliance, and for much of his life he's been trying to convince young people to see the world but invest in the Valley. The decision by GM to shutter its assembly plant in March made that harder.
You know, whatever jobs were there were taken when the steel mills closed, when Delphi closed, when Ohio Lamp closed. There was nothing left to absorb these people here that were forced out of GM.
Monica Hoskins-Van, who runs a small insurance company in nearby Boardman, says the Valley has learned to be skeptical.
Because everyone comes here with that positive message, and so many of them leave here, and they did not fulfill what they said they were going to do.
So, while they welcome news that promises jobs, Hoskins and Walker want to know more about pay, recruiting, and training. Some of the answers depend on decisions in D.C., where, though Congress failed to renew the tax credit on EV sales, the Department of Energy is considering a low-interest loan for the battery plant. Then there's the monumental role a $5 billion Postal Service contract could play in the future of Lordstown Motors, the startup that bought the assembly plant. The new company has a prototype of an electric pickup and plans to hire 400 people to start building it by next year. But CEO Steve Burns says getting the Postal Service contract would elevate Lordstown Motors beyond expectations.
Our goal is to get it back to three shifts and run it full throttle and to produce more vehicles than it's ever produced in its 53-year history.
Unions are a key piece of the Mahoning Valley's history. It's unclear if they'll have a role in its future. Pastor Joseph Walker says losing the old way of life hurt deeply, but the next year will be crucial in determining how the Valley moves on.
If during this time we see progress, it will still have a scar on the generation that was immediately affected or directly. But for the group coming up, I think you can build something.
He says the key thing the Valley needs to build now is trust. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm M.L. Schulze.
And I'm Jerry Kenny. Stay tuned. We've got more WISO Weekend on the way.
Nikki Dakota here asking, how well do you know your WISO DJs?
I'm Dante Bedingfield.
3J the DJ.
I'm Juliet Frumholt.
I'm Todd Widener.
This is Rev Cool.
Radio Bassin.
This is Devin.
You'll hear all your bluegrass favorites.
I'm Jennifer Berman.
This is Cindy Funk.
I'm Eric Henry.
I'm Evan Miller, inviting you to the outside.
Dive in to WISO's wide world of music. Find these local hosts and their hand-picked playlists at WISO.org.
I hope you'll join me Sunday afternoons for a musical trek through the shifting shades of the uniquely American art form known as the blues. Who am I? I'm Eric Henry, host of a brand new show, The Blues Revival. I think you'll like it. Come and listen.
Join Eric Henry Sunday afternoons from 3 to 5. The blues tradition is alive and well on WISO.
I'm Michelle Martin. These days, it seems like just about everybody is choosing sides and doubling down on talking points. Here at NPR, we try to cut through the noise with meaningful and respectful discussions with people from all perspectives, backgrounds, and walks of life. Join the conversation every weekend on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Coming up this afternoon at 5 on your public radio station, 91.3 WYSO.
I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday morning. Well, in a brand new year, our next segment takes off with a look to the past and to the future. Ohio voters have picked the winning candidate in each presidential contest since 1960, and no Republican has won the White House without winning Ohio. The question for those previewing the 2020 presidential election is whether the state will do it again. State House correspondent Karen Kassler reports.
There's a clear trend that's been developing across the country and in Ohio. According to Kyle Condick, an Ohio native who now edits the political website Sabato's Crystal Ball from the University of Virginia.
generally speaking, white voters with a four-year college degree are generally trending more Democratic. White voters without a four-year college degree generally trending more Republican. So kind of those white working class voters. There are a lot of those kinds of voters in Ohio. We see the trends all over the state, particularly outside of the big metro areas that are kind of moving more Republican.
Kondik is a former reporter and once worked for Democratic former Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray. Ohio election statistics expert Mike Dawson, who worked for Republican U.S. Senators George Voinovich and Mike DeWine, runs the website OhioElectionResults.com. Dawson says Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton by 8 points in Ohio in 2016, scoring big in rural areas with voters with less education.
It was really stunning to me just to look at from the 2016 to the 2012 election at people with a bachelor's degree or higher. I looked at subdivisions in the top six counties in the state, and in the top 50 educated subdivisions, Trump did worse in 49 of the 50, and he did significantly worse in many of them.
Dawson says in 38 counties, 43% of the state, Trump had the best performance of any Republican presidential candidate since 1980. And in 22 counties, Trump had the highest percentage of votes of any Republican presidential candidate since 1856. Most of those are in Appalachian, Ohio.
It used to be those counties in Appalachian, Ohio switched repeatedly because their economic lot in life was not improving, so they wanted to give the new person a chance. They are not switching back and forth now. They're staying solidly Republican and even becoming more Republican. So I'm not sure the economy is going to have as big an impact in this next election as it has in the past.
Kondik agrees, saying it's a shift he's seeing in American politics.
People are voting more on kind of these big cultural issues, same-sex marriage, abortion rights, and then kind of harder to quantify kind of cultural issues like whether Colin Kaepernick kneels during the Pledge of Allegiance during an NFL game, you know, kind of issues of sort of patriotism and national identity. And I think what the president has done is made the Republican Party sort of more of the kind of populist cultural party, which it arguably was already, but I think Trump kind of hypercharged that sort of trend.
Ohio's electorate is older and whiter than in other states, which has suggested not only that Ohio is growing more Republican, but also that it could lose its status as a key presidential election swing state. But Democrats have touted gains since 2016 in suburban Ohio and have noted that in 2018, Democratic U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown won several counties that Trump won 2 years earlier. But Dawson says it still looks like a rough road for a Democrat to win Ohio.
My suspicion is that the race in 2000 and next year will be closer because I think Trump has come close to maxing out in those rural counties. Like I said, he did the best since 1856. I'm not sure he's hit the floor yet in the suburban county. So I think you'll see a closer race. I still think that all things being equal, Trump will win.
Kondik agrees the path toward a Democratic victory is a hard one, but he says if it happens, it'll be a big win.
I think you'd probably expect Ohio to again vote probably significantly to the right of the nation again as it did in 2016. That doesn't necessarily mean the state is unwinnable for a Democrat, but I think that if a Democrat wins Ohio in 2020, that Democrat will probably be being elected in a relative landslide, you know, something like Obama 2008 when he won by about 7 points nationally.
Kondik predicted in 2016 that if Trump won, Ohio would vote for him. And he said based on history and demographics, Trump would likely do better in Ohio than nationally. Trump won Ohio by 8 points and lost the national popular vote by 2 points, meaning in 2016, Ohio was 10 points more Republican than the rest of the country. Karen Kassler at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
Our next segment celebrates the past. Since its start, Dayton Youth Radio has featured the voices of over 200 Miami Valley teenagers from 9 area high schools. Starting this week, we're going to share some of the best of Dayton Youth Radio so far, and we'll be back with new stories in the spring. Today, we hear from Billy Piddle, originally broadcast in 2018 when he was attending Centerville High School. It's about the fictional and real-life characters that can help us on our journey through life.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars.
My full name is William Richard Piddle III. Call me Billy for short. I am the third of two other people, and we all look exactly alike. I'm 18 years old and a senior at Centerville High School. I love to sing and do voice impressions of famous people or cartoon characters.
La 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 la, la 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 la, Elmo's World. Hello, boys and girls. Hello, Mr. Noodle. Hello, Dorothy. Elmo loves the Lord.
I don't remember much about my parents' divorce, and to be honest, I try not to. My dad told me my mother left to go home to Texas. I guess it always stuck with me because of how blunt and to the point my dad was. It was also where the pain started. To ease some of that pain, I like to build Lego sets. I also remember sitting behind the couch, talking to a picture of my mom. I was a lonely kid who lacked self-confidence. I watched movies, especially Star Wars, to escape the sadness in my life.
"'Tis I, Air Commander Starscream of the Decepticon Alliance, the true leader, unlike that worm, Megatron!"
The first Star Wars film I remember seeing was Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith. I was with my father, and I was only 5 years old. We went to our local Walmart and bought the two-disc special edition DVD. We watched it together while eating some very stale Taco Bell. One of the things I liked about Star Wars was the hero always needs a master or a sage to help and to give them advice on their journey. For me, that person was my counselor, Miss Grisso, from Stingley Elementary. She gave me the advice I needed to hear. She told me things like, my mom made her choice, and now I have one. I can either let my parents' divorce drag me down and not unlock my potential for greatness, or put my foot down and be that driving force that breaks the chain of my pain and to move on with my life. It wasn't until the summer of 2008, the last time I saw my mother, that what Miss Grisso said would lead to my Death Star battle, my Jedi trial, which is when Luke gets inside his X-Wing and flies with the other rebels to launch a final attack on the Death Star. My mom came to visit me from Texas during that summer. It was a great time to see her and to get to make up some of that lost time. The second to last day before she left to go back to Texas, I forgot to brush my teeth. Like a typical 8-year-old, every time she told me to go and brush my teeth, I said, I'll do it later. Finally, she took matters into her own hands and dragged me to the bathroom and brushed my teeth herself. I broke down and began to cry. I wish she and Dad hadn't split, and I didn't want her to go back to Texas. She took me over to the couch, and I let all my feelings out. I looked up and saw my mom crying. I had never seen her cry. She finally understands the pain she has caused me. I felt like I had been reborn anew, like Luke in Star Wars when he takes the killing shot into the Death Star reactor hole. He realizes he is no longer a simple farm boy, but now a hero of the rebellion and a Jedi in training. Now, I make my mission to make people laugh every day. If I can bring a little light into some person's day that is filled with darkness, then I know it's all worth it. For Dayton Youth Radio at Centerville High School, this is Billy Piddle. Statement. Meatbag is the term for humans and other organics. I gotta keep going with that. I probably can't get away with that otherwise, so... Why? Answer. You are a sack of meat with water in it. Henceforth, you are a meatbag.
That was Luke Skywalker as a teenager, written and produced by Billy Piddle, a senior at Centerville High School. Special thanks to Trisha Rapak. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Busing Blunt.
That story originally aired in 2018. Today, Billy Piddle attends the UD Sinclair Academy and is majoring in mass communication. Thank you.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the third week of deep winter, the fourth week of the Pussy Willow cracking moon, and the fourth week of the sun in winter's Capricorn. The year seems to slow down and pause now, frozen in the middle of deep winter. But natural history and our own hope for spring continue to be the sum of our observations. Since there is no real limit to what a person might watch and record, an endless winter is only in the eye of the beholder. Like every other season, winter accumulates. It's the product of the sensation that we allow it to give us. It's only what we see it to be, and it's all that we see it to be. Even now, the landscape is part spring, part late fall, and the grass is greening in sheltered corners. The fallen leaves are darkening in decay underneath the snow. Osage fruits are becoming speckled with age. Autumn berries, which measure the advance of the year in color and substance, are thinning out. Coral berries are becoming paler. Almost all the bittersweet hulls have fallen. Red winter berries lie scattered about the ground. Honeysuckle berries are completely gone. Early spring weeds like purple dead nettle and hemlock have expanded into mounds. Pussy willows have cracked a little, and multiflora rosebuds are flushed and look ready to open. Crocus and snowdrops are starting to push up through the mulch. Overwintering robins gather in flocks. Crows that spent the winter in the south return to join their year-round counterparts. Starlings come more frequently to feed in town, and sparrows have begun to mate. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the transition time to late winter. In the meantime, watch for cracks in the landscape, letting in the light of spring.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. Some of the stories you heard today were created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. Coming up next on this public radio station, Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.